show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Than never, right? It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, well, we're a little late getting to the microphone. I'm a little late getting to the microphone. Not for any other reason than simply that of the exigencies of Mother Nature. Just about an hour ago, the sky turned roughly the color of a big bruise. And, big thunderstorm blew up sort of out of nowhere. Flash flood warnings were issued. A lot of thunder, a lot of lightning, and a lot of sideways sheet rain. Sheet rain. Which then caused the ever so fragile coal-fired power grid to begin a flickering. And so I waded through the flicker, and as soon as things seemed to have settled down a little bit, well, I hotted up the microphone and got us busy. So that's where that stands. So Titanic Tuesday was officially 12 minutes late in starting. Sorry. But, you know, we've got everything backed up on battery backups here, but it doesn't, you know, even those things don't afford a whole lot of carryover time in case of an outage, so... it was just prudent to start a little late. So there we go. It's Titanic Tuesday, of course, as noted. Titanic Tuesday, of course, being the day when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing, the real geniuses of birtherism, deatherism, tentherism, booger-eaterism, the booger-vores, of course, out there living in the booger sphere, of libertarians, birchers, Randians, A.N. Randians, Milton Friedman followers, you know, Republicans. Because they are all kinds of smart. And there's all kinds of evidence of it for this evening. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention that in any given program, we try to raise $150. It's laughable, really, when you consider what a minuscule amount that is to run a radio program as compared with, you know, heck, some text sites that are out there that don't do anything more than put up text. Overnight, our good friend Phillips' subscription came through. So that means we start the evening needing to raise only $220. So that's, you know, 22 people, or I'm sorry, 230. No, 220. See how it goes? See how it is with me and math on the fly? 220. 22 people at $10 apiece, 11 people at $20 apiece, 10 people at $22 apiece. Two at 110, four at 55, like that. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com. The traditional mail address is there as well. Oh, look, buffering, our old friend. Damn. Are we going to be doing this again all night? It had settled down so nicely. Come on, come on. Anyway, the traditional mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. It is, of course, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801, with the gentle reminder to please not make anything, checks, money orders, whatever, payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Best made payable to Head On Communications, or The Horn works fine as well. And Sal has gotten us started this evening. Thank you very much. That means we only have $215 to go. Thank you, Sal. Thank you very much for being a part of the nightly process. It means a lot. Well, for those of you listening live, we're not having a lot of fun here. For those of you listening on the podcast, this makes not a whit of difference. See, this is why I waited 12 minutes to start the broadcast. I thought it had settled down. Diddle-e-damn. Okay, I'm going to hit stop here. Hold on. Okie dokie, let's try this again. I am, after all, the eternal optimist. We should be back any moment now. There was a great peal of thunder, and our friends at Shentel, I don't know, is it possible for an entire ISP to yelp like a scared dog and run under the bed? So, no, we're back. My head is completely out of its happy let's do a program space. When last we spoke moments ago, I said, well, here's where I got this story from News Ninja Gene. Got a couple of hunting stories here. And they sort of span the continent. The first one comes from Iowa Stan. Where I guess if it's got four legs, and then again, we got one out of Texas, too. Jeepers. Okay, let's start in Texas, not Iowa. Let's start in Texas, because it's just a little easier. Okay, so in Texas, in particular, down in Fort Worth, the home of the Horn's own Sergi, a woman was sitting in her home watching TV on Saturday night. She's 78 years old. Watching TV Saturday night with the loaded family 12-gauge sitting by her TV watching chair. That's when Fido wandered by. Maybe he's a very happy dog, and he's got that swinging wagon tail. We used to have a Labrador Retriever that could clear an entire coffee table with one swipe of her mighty Labrador Retriever tail. Just whoop, whoop, yeah, because she was happy. Well, this dog, whoop, and the shotgun goes over, shotgun goes off, and shoots Granny in the foot. Sharon Neal, a police spokeswoman for the Fort Worth Police Department, did tell the media that the victim had advised that it was an accident and the dog was not to blame. Because I guess in Texas they'll send a dog to the death house, too. Oh, for pity's sakes. So, maybe maybe people are a little more, I don't know, maybe they're just nervous about dogs. They're apparently nervous about our four-legged friends in Iowa. Like I said, I got this story from News Ninja Gene. It's a story from yesterday via The Guardian, but it has to do with something that happened back in February in Buchanan County, Iowa. A hunter was out getting in touch with his rugged individuality, exercising his Second Amendment freedoms. And I'm not exactly sure what the Freedom Protector was hunting that day. But wound up shooting, the hunter did, an animal that the hunter, the Freedom Protector, felt quite certain must have surely been a coyote. Comes from coyote, and you don't really pronounce the L, C-O-Y-O-T-L. Cognate words in a number of different indigenous languages. And they have become a bit of a problem. And they're interbreeding with stray dogs and things like that. Well, no, not things like that, just stray dogs. And other coyotes, of course. So our Freedom Protector saw this critter and decided the critter no longer had any business operating on planet Earth and blew it away. It was about 65 to 70 pounds, according to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. It was female. And no, it wasn't a coyote. It was the first gray wolf that had been documented to have appeared in Iowa in 89 years. Then again, just as well, I suppose, it probably could have, if it had gotten down into any of those Roundup ready corn patches, it probably would have died poisoned to death anyway. Wildlife experts say they think that it's likely that the gray wolf had traveled, because they do, down into Iowa way from either Wisconsin or Minnesota. First gray wolf in Iowa in 89 years, and our brave Freedom Protector blew its head off. Of course, there have been no charges. The hunter was not cited for killing the gray wolf because he believed, I love this part of the story, he believed he was shooting at a coyote. So as long as you believe you're shooting at one thing, and it turns out you blow away the first of another kind of thing to enter your state in 89 years, it's no big deal. Right? Sure. So now head east. We started in Texas with shotgun Fido. We've gone to Iowa Way, Stan, to the world's most unfortunate gray wolf. No, that'd probably, the world's most unfortunate gray wolf would probably be the one that gets shot from a helicopter by the half-baked Alaskan and then has its paws hacked off as she lustily sings some wolf-killing song of the great far north. And then there's New Hampshire. Where it is apparently spring gobbler season? Yeah, gobblers being turkeys for the non-hunters among us. A pair of buddies who had been hunting together for 40 years, cousins, Kenneth Ranfus, and Glenn Ranfus, were out hunting turkeys. And you got to be real extra special, stealthy and stalky when you're going after the gobbler. Got to be real still. You got to be all camoed up, absolutely invisible. And you sit back there and you use a little device that makes the a sound like a female turkey that wants to have sex with the male turkey. So Glenn Ranfus was crouched there in the brush, and I guess maybe something itched. He wasn't doing some good turkey hunting because he wasn't being still, but he went up and he took his hat off to scratch his little old head, which is kind of bald and pinkish maybe. And one of the things you never do when you're turkey hunting is wear anything red. You know, don't tie a red band because that will make other turkey hunters think you are a turkey and blow you the hell away. Yeah, it must have been his little pink, little bald pink scalp because his freedom protecting, getting in touch with his independent up from the bootstraps roots cousin saw the hat come off, saw the flash of pink in the brush, and BAM! Blasted the bejesus out of his cousin. He says he was crouching in the woods when he had this eerie feeling, and he said, I turned around and the gun was pointing at me. And, yeah, his cousin, Kenneth Ranfus, about 30 yards away, let loose at him with the 12-gauge shotgun. It doesn't say what kind of shot was in it. It wasn't buckshot or anything. He wound up with about 5 BBs in him. Glenn did. He was quite fortunate in that regard. You've got a fighting chance of surviving a shotgun blast at 30 yards. Now, here in West Virginia, we still allow people to hunt wild turkeys with a rifle gun. Not just a shotgun. 30 yards with a rifle gun is an entirely different story. That generally is followed by the words, cancel Christmas. They have not given a complete pass to Kenneth Ranfus. He might be charged. And he's probably going to get his hunting license suspended. But there's no hard feelings. It's just like when the sitting vice president of the United States shot a guy in the face. His cousin Glenn said, I feel lucky Kenny wasn't a great shot. He made an honest mistake. But they're going to keep hunting together as soon as Kenny gets his hunting license back. Joshua McKay of New Hampshire's Hunter Education Unit in the Department of Natural Resources said, listen, identify your target. Head to toe, beak to tail. It really shouldn't happen. A human doesn't really look like a turkey in the woods. But man, if you're shooting at a rustle in the bushes, which is kind of what happened here and why I've never been one to go out spring gobbler, people get that fever and just start shooting. Not that I'm giving anything away, but in the state of West Virginia, one of the best ways to commit a murder and walk away from it is to invite your intended victim to go turkey hunting with you spring gobbler season. You let him get all set up. You use a rifle gun. You know, a little 223 will do fine. 22 mag. And you let him sit there and start scratching. And then you just murder him. And you say, I thought he was a turkey. And you might do a year in the county jail. You're not going to do any hard felony Department of Corrections prison time. It happens. I know it happens. I know for a fact it happens. But just remember that's just how it goes. Because, after all, guns are more important than humans. Or wolves, or grannies. She was 78 years old, and she was watching TV on Saturday. I mean, is she really, really just frustrated down there in Fort Worth with the state of television today? Rufus, get me the Elvis gun and a peanut butter and banana sandwich. I'm a-shooting the TV again. Irish Dave with a question. Is there drinking involved in turkey hunting? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, quite often there is. That's thirsty work. Sometimes people even use an elixir named for the very quarry after which they seek. To wit, wild turkey. A buddy of mine who grew up in the Poconos told me that up there, they refer during deer season, they refer to beer as pork chop in a bottle. So it is not at all foreign to... No. Bam! Oops! Luda with an observation. Here's a stupid factoid. Iowa means the sleepy ones in Lakota. Apparently not drowsy enough not to blast that wolf all to be Jesus. Now, where else? I would be remiss if I did not mention this. We are two West Virginians short this day. The population of West Virginia fell by two human beings overnight. Down in Boone County, West Virginia, and you might remember that I mentioned that Boone County has gone without legislative representation for the last term and a half because its member of the House of Delegates has decided to accept the legislative salary of $15,000 per session, but not show up, instead going off to learn to fly planes somewhere for the Air National Guard. Now, I'm not being critical of going and learning to fly planes. People have dreams. But really, you cash the $15,000 check? Why not turn it back over to the state treasurer and say, I am proud to represent the citizens of Boone County, but I cannot in good conscience accept this. Well, anyway, that county, which has had no representation in the House of Delegates for a term and a half, that's where the mine operated by Patriot Coal is located. Turns out Patriot Coal has had at that mine a whole raft of safety violations, and it appears to be a roof collapse, a roof cave-in. Or what was referred to back in the day as a slate fall. And two men were killed. Yes, Marty, are these two West Virginians we'll actually miss? Asks Marty. Yeah, we will. because their mamas will miss them, Marty. And their daddies. And their wives. And their sons. And their daughters. Marty says, I saw that headline. I take the last comment back. Yeah. Coal kills. I don't know why there's not a hashtag out there that trends every time this happens that says coal kills. Because there's not a single part of the coal process that doesn't. It kills the people who dig it out of the ground. It kills the people who live near where they dig it out of the ground. It kills people where they burn it. It kills people who breathe it downwind and ingest it downstream. Coal kills. Meanwhile, the deaths from a mine disaster in western Turkey, somewhere south of Istanbul, has claimed lives in excess of a dozen, and there are more than 200 men trapped underground. Because coal kills. And at the same time, lo and behold, I saw earlier today over at Climate Progress something that I find amazing, something that I find beautiful. In the last day or so, and they're kind of ahead of schedule, really. Germany has set a new record. It was May the 29th, 2 years ago when I was over there, that they hit another milestone. On that day, two years ago, May 29th, 2012, German electricity generation crossed the 50% line. Of the energy produced in Germany that day came from renewable energy sources. Well, 2 years later, and they're showing no signs of, you know, bless their hearts, when the Germans get their minds set on something, they will accomplish it. And they are they're committed. There's a commitment there, even though the big money boys, like the power company, the coal-fired power company that lost $7 billion in a year. Hee-hoo! Yeah. Good for, keeps the lights on, it does. I'm guessing they don't have those billboards in Germany. No, they really are. They're making tremendous progress. And this past Sunday in Germany, the German energy grid consisted of the transmission of almost 75% of its energy coming from wind and solar and other renewable sources. Hey, that doesn't include Russian gas. Doesn't include Appalachian coal. The energy production was so impressive for a time on Sunday that electricity prices dipped into negative numbers. That's that moment when they send out the call saying, hey, listen, even if you don't need it, will you turn the lights on, please? We got too much renewable energy. We got too much electricity out there. We do. It is expected, the goal that Germany set for itself was to be almost entirely on renewable energy sources by 2050. They made a 25% leap in 2 years. I don't know about you, but I'm going to take the under on 2050. Meanwhile, 13% of electricity in the United States as of November 2013 came from renewables. Because coal keeps the lights on in the funeral home. Yeehaw! The Germans set their mind to it. In particular, the Germans saw the Fukushima disaster and had probably no small amount of dreck float over them as a result of the Chernobyl disaster. But after the Fukushima disaster, said, stop, no more. Yeah. It can be done. It's just a matter of national determination. Which apparently the new United States is just not quite sharp enough to figure out, which is for somebody raised by a World War II veteran and Depression-era parents generally who believed that the United States of America could do anything, and was taught to believe the same myself. That's a tough admission to make. Sorry, the United States is too pathetic. The United States is too broke down. The United States is too sorry to be able to figure out how to tap the most obtainable, renewable, sustainable sources of energy in the solar system and on the planet, the wind and the sun. No, we need to frack us some stuff. Oh, fracking? Fracking? Sure, why not? You remember Anchorman 2 that came out not too long back? Ron Burgundy? Remember how he actually anchored an evening newscast out in North Dakota somewhere? Where, for all I know, those were the sons and daughters of frackers wearing the or Bakken crude types, with crude indeed, wearing those T-shirts we talked about yesterday evening. Super drunk, S-I-O-U-X-P-E-R, drunk with a profile of an indigenous American sucking down beer through a beer bong. Yeah, for all I know, those are the kids of frackers. So, but it turned out that Will Ferrell didn't just go to North Dakota and do a promotional goof for Anchorman 2. No. While he was out there, they named an oil well. Yeah. They named an oil well for the fictitious character played by Will Ferrell. The name of the well is Ron Burgundy 32314H. And there are apparently three Ron Burgundy wells. They're owned by Emerald Oil out of Denver, Colorado. And Ron Burgundy 32314H is leaking. Emergency response officials were informed of the leak this past Friday. And Ron Burgundy 32314H has not stopped leaking crude since. This here being Tuesday, the 13th of May. Mm-hmm. they're trying to catch the leaking oil with berms, and then they're trying to suck it up and take it to disposal sites. But here's a funsy. According to the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources, well, we can't have full disclosure on exactly what's going wrong with Ron Burgundy 32314H, because that well, it's a secret well. Yeah, I know, it doesn't compute for me either that you would go to all the trouble of naming it Ron Burgundy 32314H and then say, yeah, but it's a secret. Now, what's a secret is just the degree, probably the degree to which they're poisoning the land around the well pad. Or well, whatever. I'm presuming that this well is working within the Bakken shale formation, that it is providing the same kind of crude oil that explodes on bomb trains in places like the little town in North Dakota or Pickens County, Alabama, or Lynchburg, Virginia, or Lac Mégantic in Quebec. Yeah. The only thing that can be released about the well is the name of the operator, Emerald Oil. The name of the well, Ron Burgundy, 32314H. Its file and identification number, again, 32314H. The grid coordinates for where it is, and the date that the secrecy agreement will be lifted. The secrecy of the Ron Burgundy 32314H leaking well, it stays secret until August the 4th of this year. Only then, can the public, you know, we the people out there, going at it, puttering along, working on that more perfect union. Only then can we the people be told exactly how much of this toxic hydrocarbon filth the fine folks at Emerald Energy have spilled onto the North Dakota countryside via Ron Burgundy 32314H. Here's a funny for you. It is possible that that information could be put out, but the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources, which at this point in time is a wholly owned subsidiary of the crude oil business, they said if there was a health or a safety threat, the department would let the Department of Health and the Department of Emergency Services know. But that's only determined on a case-by-case basis. Allison Ritter is a spokesperson for the aforesaid wholly owned subsidiary of the crude oil industry, the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources, and she said, it's important to point out that just because a well is in a confidentiality status, it doesn't mean the public would not be informed in an emergency. Should an incident progress to where health or human safety were at risk, we do have authority to notify emergency agencies to protect the public. Yeah. 18%, by the way, 18% of the oil wells in North Dakota are operating under secrecy. Secrecy agreements like this. Why would that be? Why would the health and well-being of people in North Dakota be put somewhere out way behind the needs of the oil company? Do I really have to ask? Because money. Jack Ekstrom is with Whiting Petroleum. He's the vice president of government affairs for Whiting Petroleum. And he explained the secret wells as follows. If you have a significant completion and there's acreage available, you don't want that particular completion to be made public until you've leased as much acreage as you possibly can around it. Because money. I mean, so what if we poison a few people here and there? I mean, this is the same fracking process we used for the Marcellus Shale back east. And it's water intensive. It's all kind of intensive. It's poisonous as shit. But you don't want to just be telling people that because money. No worries, Marty. No worries. Marty says, my apologies to the families of the fallen coal workers, to you, Bob, and the horn list. I should have listened further before commenting. No worries. No worries. There is an adversarial, there's an adversarial attitude that attaches, and it's a sad one. It's on display here. The coal families despise us tree huggers, and in return, it's very easy to despise them back. Right. Do you get the sense that it's going to be rather of a somewhat busy little Titanic Tuesday? Because it is. 19 shades of busy, really. Kind of in line with the piece that I wrote, letter from Summersville Hospital, which is getting a little traffic around and about. There's an article at Think Progress. The poorest Americans are still locked out of Obamacare. I don't think that headline does the issue justice because it's not like Obamacare locks them out. In Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, in Tennessee, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Maine, in Virginia, in North and South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Well, it's not the Obama administration keeping them out. It is their separate but equal repig-licking government structures. Think Progress writes, despite the fact that the Affordable Care Act has been in place for 4 years by now, portions of it, more than a million low-income Americans who are dependent on community health centers are still going uninsured, according to a new report conducted by researchers at George Washington University. Patients at community health centers, which receive federal funding to operate in medically underserved communities, are typically even poorer than the uninsured population as a whole. They also tend to be in worse health compared to other low-income people. Nonetheless, many of these vulnerable Americans are locked out of health reform because they live in states that have rejected Obamacare's optional Medicaid expansion. And again, I love this site, but they're kind of dropping the ball there. States that have rejected Obamacare's optional Medicaid expansion. It wasn't optional. Damn it. It was rendered optional by the single most evil member of the Republican Party. A glassy, beady-eyed freak in Washington, D.C. by the name of John Roberts. Yeah. The Affordable Care Act made, as it was passed, made Medicaid expansion A, fully funded, and B, mandatory. But because, and I know I've explained this before, but I think we really need to get on the ground with this, but because Medicaid is, for all intents and purposes, a single-payer insurance system that is administered individually by the several states, it represents a threat. It represents a, well, hell, it represents a tremendous threat to the for-profit insurance industry. I mean, the other side of the Affordable Care Act are subsidies, which is basically another way of saying corporate welfare for the insurance industry. But the Medicaid expansion, which dangerously got rid of means testing, or not means testing, but asset testing. Got rid of asset testing meant that people could be admitted to it based solely on whether or not they met that 137% of the poverty level threshold that was expressed in the expansion. Because in places like Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Texas, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, and other benighted states, it is the asset testing that is sufficient to render even the poorest of people from having access to health care. If you have a rattly old junk car, if you live in anything more luxurious than a cardboard box over a steam grate, you cannot qualify for Medicaid in the states that live in perpetual night. South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Maine, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Utah, Alaska. You are, in short, screwed. So, no, describing the Obamacare optional Medicaid expansion is a little bit duplicitous because, maybe somebody who doesn't know about this could read that and say, well, hell, why'd they make it optional? They didn't. It was transformed into optional because to have it be mandatory would put not only the camel's nose but the hump under the for-profit insurance industry tent in this country. If we ever get a Democratic Congress under a Democratic president again, I'm going to holler till the rafters raise that we need to raise the eligibility threshold for expanded Medicaid to 200% of the poverty line. Because that will be the beginning of the end of for-profit insurance. At least as the dominant insurance model in this country. Because frankly, I don't give much of a damn about any CEOs of any insurance companies. I'm hard-pressed to figure out what the CEO of a healthcare insurance company is actually doing for America. He or she is damned well doing something to America, but I can't really see where they're doing anything for America. So if you should happen to engage in, and I don't mean necessarily arguing, but if you should happen to engage in a discussion about the Affordable Care Act, and the question comes around as to health care and the Medicaid expansion, see if you can explain to them about the Plessyization of health care in the United States. Explain it in those terms, because that is the nearest analog that we have. Plessy versus Ferguson was a terribly, awfully decided case that challenged the notion of separate but equal accommodations as between the races. In other words, schools for white people, schools for black people. Water fountains for white people, water fountains for black people. And the upshot of Plessy versus Ferguson was that a Supreme Court majority that lived in perpetual night and could see neither reason nor humanity held that separate accommodations were okay as long as they were separate but equal. When in fact the reality of it was that if there was a what was called a colored or Negro school in Alabama and a white school, the resources devoted to the colored school would be minuscule as compared to the resources devoted to the white school. But the Supreme Court made that nasty decision out of whole cloth, and it took years for Plessy to be overturned. It took decades for Plessy to be overturned, for a Supreme Court majority, largely in Brown versus Board of Education, to go, no, no. No such thing. It's bull. It's hooey. It's... yeah. But because this Supreme Court was deliberately packed with right-wing ideologues and unrepentant, unreconstructed old Confederates, they are trying to resurrect some of the nastiest doctrines in judicial history. And 2 years ago, as soon as the ACA decision came down, I recognized it for what it was. It sets up an America that is separate but equal. And it does so in a brutal fashion. Because as I noted in the essay, what is it about being from Kentucky that makes you more American than being from Mississippi? Because if, as these right-wingers like to hoot and holler all the time, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that language from the Declaration of Independence really is the law of this country, and we had a soundbite just last week from Judge Roy Moore of Alabama Stan saying exactly that, then why... why is an American citizen in Kentucky more able to pursue life-preserving, life-extending health care than is an American in Louisiana? In essence, the Affordable Care Act of 2 years ago, the decision on it by the Supreme Court sets up a separate but equal Plessy-like situation across the United States. And so if you live in Indiana or Pennsylvania or South Carolina, that mother of miseries, and you get sick, you die if you don't get well by yourself. If in South Carolina you feel those funny pains in your chest, you hope it's indigestion so you can go to work at your three uniquely American jobs tomorrow and keep the young'uns fed and keep a roof over their head and the lights on. Because you, in South Carolina, a poor working American, you are separate from, but somehow philosophically equal to, a person who, upon becoming ill, can go and get medical treatment. This is why I so detest, I so absolutely and utterly despise John Roberts. He sits there in that building and he crafts majorities to tear this country apart. Because just to look at the map of who has expanded Medicaid and who does not, it is a map that displays a shredded America. It is a de facto secession. And the import of that Affordable Care Act decision has been vastly underappreciated on the Medicaid side of it. And maybe that's because the liberals were more concerned with seeing the individual mandate go through than the state mandate. Maybe it's still very easy to forget about poor people. But in its operation, the Affordable Care Act decision effectively enshrines the old pre-Civil War notion that states can take a piece of federal legislation and decide whether they will or will not abide by it. Nullification. And that, too, is not just the camel's nose under the tent, but the whole damned hump. And it is a terrible, terrible precedent for a nation that hopes to have any sort of a future to enshrine. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Looks like we're going to have another tough fundraising evening. Nobody out there standing with Sal just yet. That means we've $215 to raise this evening. And all help is greatly appreciated. In the mailbag, a note from Tim from L.A. Bob, I feel badly for those in states that refuse the Medicaid expansion. I mean, I now have full coverage medical, and I'm waiting for dental, too. This is unbelievable, and dental is not even part of the ACA. But because of the expansion, I qualify. The situation is sickening, Tim says, as everyone should have medical, yes, including undocumented workers, too. Oh, and undocumented workers may also receive medical care as well. In California, undocumented workers can pay taxes, and with the funds collected, they can qualify for Medi-Cal and state Social Security. That is humane. On the other hand, in South Carolina, an American citizen fully vested with all the rights and privileges of citizenship under the 14th and 13th and 14th Amendments? No, not so much. Kind of out of luck. Just not that American. Like I said, kind of a busy little Titanic Tuesday for us. Going back to North Dakota for just a second, it should be noted that back in 2013, for which the numbers have recently been released, the oil and gas industry in the United States of America averaged 20 spills per day. That's up 18% from 2012. God only knows what 2014 is going to look like. So I hope I have presented at least a cogent explanation of why it is so important that we not let the Medicaid expansion simply roll off the radar. This is the civil rights issue of our time. And where people really are dying for want of access to health care and access to health insurance, which prevents them from getting health care. The people with with just great masses of spirochetes where their brains used to be, you know, birthers, deathers, tenthers, birchers, libertarians, booger eaters, Republicans, libertarian. Did I say libertarians? Yeah. Well, they're convinced it's the exact opposite. Nobody dies because they can't get health care in America. Hell no. Enter Representin' Fleming, appearing on News Radio 710 KEEL, explaining what's really happening out there with health care.
No, I appreciate it. I'm a veteran, and that's just unbelievable. He has just pillaged veterans, and the veterans, some of them are standing up saying, I like the guy, but he's killing them. He's killing them. He doesn't even know it.
Well, and again, that's true. That, you know, that's the reason why our founding fathers created a government that was a tripartite one in which there's checks and balances. But right now it's not functioning that way. You have a president that just goes out willy-nilly, ad-libbing it all the time, doing things to really to appeal to his base, for political purposes. And all of these unintended consequences all the people that are being damaged and injured as a result of it. This is real lives that are being hurt by this president, who whose main interest is just to promote his agenda and his political aims.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I mean, as a veteran, I mean, there's two places you can give your life, one on the field of battle, and the other one's at your local VA. So I'll let you all talk from there.
You hear that, you hate to hear that, but
yeah.
There's always been running a news thing of people that are upset, of the veterans. I guess there's been a rash of people dying and feel like they're not getting the care they need.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you mentioned earlier. This could be the new system.
This is the type of thing you would see with Obamacare, a centralized system that when you have the president making all the decisions, whose motivations may not be necessarily the best at all times.
What's going on?
Yeah, see, because the Kenyan Muslim fascist socialist anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people's out there bumping off veterans. Only, of course, he's not. This just exists in the sort of dead spaces in between the spirochetes that pass for representing Fleming's brains. Anybody care to guess why there's a problem inside the Department of Veterans Affairs? Anything happen in, say, the last 14 years might have something to do with understaffing at the VA. No. Oh, well, I mean, you know, we didn't have a war of choice that was run up on credit cards that we weren't prepared to support the veterans of in any way. Yeah, thank you, Devin. I love those one letter answers. W. Bingo. Because, see, I don't know how many people remember, but I do remember when W started his vendetta against the people of Iraq. Experts said, listen, you're going to use a lot of the American military on this little escapade. And we're going to have a lot of people coming back with a lot of needs because that's how war works. And we're pretty much not prepared for that. So what did the W administration do? Well, it produced spending plans, you know, budgets, that called for things like the funding for the CDC's traumatic brain injury department to be zeroed out, when traumatic brain injury just turned out to be the signature war wound of the war against the people of Iraq. See how it works? But no, it's all because the Kenyan Muslim fascist anti-colonialist with the deep-seated hatred of white people is making individual case-by-case decisions about who dies and who don't. You know, because he's just ad-libbing it. Yeah. Oh, mother. So let's take a little break. I've just about filibustered through the entirety of the first half of the program. Phone lines are open. 304-658-3333 is the number. Or if you wish to reach out via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you do that. BobKincaidHorn. Email comes into BobKincaid@gmail.com. You can follow and comment on Twitter @BobKincaid. And commentary also rides into my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid. thanks going out to Brian. Brian has joined Sal in helping with tonight's fundraising. We are down to needing only 20 more folks at $10 apiece. 20 people, 10 bucks. Can't we do this? Sure is kind of important if we can. Because the bills ye have always with ye. So, like I said, break coming up. Light up the phones. Bring any Titanic wisdom to the table. He's just ad-libbing it that you care to bring. Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. We'll be back. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I live on a street where there are many, many cars and trucks and factories that pump and bang and grind all night and day. It is a miracle that I can write poetry or sleep or talk on the telephone or that my lover will visit me here. There is so much noise. Every few minutes a jet comes in low or a prop job swings down like a kamikaze. There is an airport at the end of my street. The New Age people say that you choose all these things. Choose the cars and trucks and airplanes, me and all of my neighbors. Well, maybe this is true. Maybe we can't live without all this goddamn noise. Maybe I need the noise to write poems, make love, and eat. I'm going to hang a sign out my window that says, "More noise, please," or "Thank you for making noise." Maybe we are the kind of people who need to have what we don't want just to get along, to do the basic things. Myself, I could not sleep last night, and I could not close the window either. I tried to tear the window out of its frame and put it in a closed position, banging and ripping with the hammer and a screwdriver, standing on the window ledge in my socks, three stories up. But the window wouldn't come out, and the factory was screaming, and the trucks were rumbling, and the whole world was praying for silence, and it was up to me to shut the window, and I couldn't get it down. I was just making more noise. A jet went by, and all the people waved. "Thanks," I yelled, as the shifts changed without a lull in production at the big plant across the street. The workers lined up at the bus stop, watching me with my hammer in the window. I put sponge stoppers in my ears, but I can't stand those things for more than a few minutes. Finally, I put my head between two pillows. It is the same every night. I love it. I need it. Without you, I could not live. I would not have written this poem, I yell, the window dangling half on, half off.
It's Tuesday, May 13, 2014.
It has passed the point of no return.
Yep, looks like we broke Antarctica.
Rising sea levels, drought, more wildfires, more severe storms. Those are bad for the economy.
President Obama wants to take action.
I do not believe that human activity is causing these dramatic changes to our climate.
Not President Rubio doesn't. Severe weather whiplash smacks the country, plus solar panels finally back on the White House.
All of that and more straight ahead. from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I don't agree with the notion that some are putting out there, including scientists, that somehow there are actions we can take today that would actually have an impact on what's happening in our climate.
Well, the good news, Senator Rubio, is that by the time your Florida constituents realize you're wrong, they'll be underwater. Good luck with that. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so much to cover today. Triple digits continue out here on the West Coast. Coal mines are exploding around the country and indeed the world. And, well, you got a hell of a lot more to cover, so get right to it.
Yes, two coal miners were killed on the job Monday night after a roof collapsed at the troubled Brody Coal Mine in West Virginia, which has been repeatedly cited for violating federal mine safety regulations over the past year. 8 U.S. coal miners have been killed on the job so far in just 2014. But even worse news in Turkey, where AP reports over 200 coal miners are reportedly trapped after an underground explosion and fire on Tuesday. And just a week after the landmark National Climate Assessment Report showed climate change is here and impacting the U.S. right now, 400 miles of interstate highway in Wyoming were shut down on Sunday after a rare May snowstorm dumped 3 feet of snow. Another severe weather system brought torrential rains and flash floods to Ohio that overflowed municipal sewage systems. It's the opposite in drought-stricken Oklahoma and West Texas, where early-season wildfires have forced evacuations and destroyed hundreds of homes. And here in Los Angeles, as you heard at BradBlog World Headquarters, we are now hitting our third heat wave of the year, and we're forecast to break heat records this week.
And that comes on the tail of the warmest winter on record out here and the worst drought on record. As the National Climate Assessment released last week, 4 years in the making, said, climate change is happening now, not 50 and 100 years in the future.
Yep, and it's happening down in Antarctica. Scientists say the West Antarctic ice sheet has begun a slow and probably irreversible collapse that could eventually raise global sea levels by 10 to 15 feet.
NASA's lead polar ice researcher said, quote, this is really happening. There's nothing to stop it now.
Two new studies show the warming ocean is eating away underneath a group of massive glaciers on the Antarctic coastline that hold back the massive West Antarctic ice sheet from flowing into the ocean. Glaciologist Ian Jockin tells NPR,
if this glacier were to completely sort of disintegrate, it would kind of create a vacuum of ice to which the rest of the ice sheet would sort of flow into and largely destabilize much of the rest of the ice sheet. And that has enough ice to raise sea level by about 10 feet.
By about 10 feet. This comes just weeks after the latest Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report comes out with different numbers. Now they've got to revise those numbers, revise them upwards just based on this new information of this collapsing ice sheet.
Yes. Now they estimate that this process would take hundreds of years. But if it is irreversible, they warn, quote, many of the world's coastal cities will eventually have to be abandoned.
Don't tell Marco Rubio.
Yes, that's right. Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio, potential 2016 presidential candidate.
Not potential anymore, just saying.
Tells Jonathan Carl of ABC News he doesn't believe the science or in taking action to protect future generations.
Let me get this straight. You do not think that human activity, the production of CO2, has caused warming to our planet?
I do not believe that human activity is causing these dramatic changes to our climate the way these scientists are portraying it.
Oh, the senator from Florida knows better than the scientists about climate science. Go figure.
Meanwhile, in a speech on Friday at a Walmart in California that has a newly installed solar roof, President Obama debunked Rubio's denier myth and showed how major corporations like Walmart and IKEA and Apple are creating jobs and saving hundreds of millions of dollars in energy costs.
But we know that generating more clean energy, using less dirty energy, wasting less energy overall can be good for business and consumers. And it's also good for the world that we leave for our children. Rising sea levels, drought, more wildfires, more severe storms. Those are bad for the economy.
President Obama is not waiting, and he is moving ahead with executive actions to boost the energy efficiency of the nation's commercial and federal buildings. And while he was making that announcement, solar panels were put back on the White House. President Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House during the 1970s oil crisis. Ronald Reagan took them down. And over the weekend, once again, American-made solar panels are now generating clean energy on the White House roof.
Don't worry, President Rubio will take them back down again. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation while you're there to help support the Green News Report, to help us stay on your public airwaves. Follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You might as well be walking on the sun. You might.
Hey, Brad, Desi, I don't know if that bumper really works. It's more like might as well be walking on the water, isn't it? Yeah, I found one of those maps that provides a look at what 69 feet of sea level rise, which is what is now being predicted as a distinct possibility after the total melt-off of the West Antarctic ice sheet. And just because I thought it would, well, I mean, he knows the lay of the land and everything. I showed, Ferg does and Agnes does, I showed him the map and showed him what happens to Washington, D.C. with a 69-foot sea level increase. Jesus. White House is underwater. The south lawn of the Capitol is beachfront property. The stadiums are underwater. Yeah. New York is gone. So's Philly. Wilmington, North Carolina? Goodbye, Miami. We can only hope Marco Rubio will be there at the time now. This is hundreds of years in the future, so why bother, right? I'd like to get ahead of the problem. Personally, I would like to take all the... I'd like to take all of the global warming deniers and, you know, South Florida's lovely. I just want to move them there, kind of get Israeli on their ass and build a wall around them and not let them out, and let them sit there and deny global warming and climate catastrophe until the water gets up to where they can't deny it anymore. And since they're Republicans anyway, they won't expect the federal government to come and rescue them because, you know, without some sort of... tax cuts to some people wanting to eat food somewhere else. So all it's all good, right? It is 24 minutes before the hour, and like I said, we need to raise about $200 more to come up with a fundraising goal for this evening, or then we're going to be in a real hurting hole, because that would mean trying to raise $350 tomorrow, and if we couldn't raise $150 last night and can't raise $200 tomorrow night, then trying to raise $350 tomorrow night just becomes silly, doesn't it? I mean, reality, right? To the phones, 304-658-3333 is the number. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob?
Yeah.
I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, welcome.
For over 6 months, though. And I'm calling you from South Florida, so I got my hip waders on already.
That might be a good idea. Give me a first name to work with.
A Scary Jerry.
Skay J?
No, Scary Jerry.
Oh, Scary J. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little break up there, but okay.
I use that moniker because I just got disability after a traumatic head injury. And, you know, the only thing that worked was medical cannabis, and I'm kind of pissed off about this. You know, I wonder if the next American Revolution will start over medical freedom.
That was kind of the vision that I had when I was sitting there listening to the ad from the woman who hopefully will get her ass handed to her in West Virginia today, saying she's going to go to Washington and fight Obamacare. This is stuff that's worth marching over. Because they are clearly at war with us. Because when she says she's going to fight Obamacare, what she means is she's going to fight the ability of a waitress working below minimum wage to be able to go to the doctor when she's sick. That's what that means.
I hit my head on the concrete about 25 miles an hour. You know, a couple more miles an hour, I would have died. And the only thing that saved me was medical cannabis. And, you know, and I got the arrests to prove for it. I'll tell you what, I'm quiet, I'm calm, I'm collected, I stay out of camera's eye, as it were. And between me, you, and the NSA, before that, the only reason I haven't shot up a whole bunch of people or seriously lost my mind was a good Christian mom and medical cannabis. I went to my psychiatrist today. He prescribed a bunch of crap. My state had an expanded Medicaid, so I'm gonna hit up the weed guy later.
I think you're probably but what else can you do?
Cry or scream, man. Cry or scream.
I mean, you could. Let's see. Let me check my map. Colorado expanded Medicaid. There's a possibility, but you know what? That South Florida warm weather lifestyle is not going to play well out there.
It's about 77 degrees right now.
Yeah.
10 mile an hour breeze. I mean, the bottom part of the state is blue as fuck. But you know, I wish we'd separate. I really do. I don't even know if the medical cannabis thing will pass this year. And I'm sick of it, man. Well, why? You know what? You can have a gun, but I can't choose my state of mind. Are you effing kidding me? Really? Really?
Yeah. Well, see, cannabis. I guess as the thinking goes, cannabis doesn't protect freedom, but a gun does.
I don't get it, Bob.
I'm kind of lost too.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people like me, man.
Sure.
In the margins, under the radar. In fact, we're the great pill mill state, and when that started, and I saw the pictures coming out of Afghanistan that American soldiers were guarding poppy fields, I'm like, they're making heroin addicts. That's what they're doing. I asked everybody, why are we still in Afghanistan 5 years after Bin Laden supposedly dead? Can anybody explain that to me?
See, I remember way back during the earlier days of our misbegotten war on Afghanistan. Remember that of all the craptastic things that the Taliban were and are, they had actually pretty much put the heroin production in Afghanistan to bed. They did it pretty brutally, but they had. Well, after we put the warlords back in charge, the actual bricks were arriving in New York that had brand stamps on them. You know. From the House of Najibullah or whatever.
I'm going to give you a man on the street price. I don't, you know, I have friends in high and low places, I would just say. Do you know what the wholesale price of heroin was before the Afghanistan war program?
Honestly, no.
About $800 to $1,200. Right now it's $100.
For what quantity?
A gram.
Whoa.
Yeah, this
now the $100 stuff, has it been stepped on all over creation or?
That's like 50% and 180 for 90%. This is social engineering, man.
Jesus.
Yeah. Some crazy crap going on, also here in I could go on and on and on, but. Yeah, this was on purpose. It's all on purpose. You know, the pagans say that there are no coincidences. And I'm starting to believe that. And now I know victims. I don't know if I believe that completely. But I did go to West by God, Virginia once.
Did you really?
I was in a blizzard in 1990 or 91, I do believe. And, you know, I tan a lot darker than you guys up there, and a lot of racists up there. So,
by at least a couple of metrics, we are the single most racist state in the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, it's us against the rich people, man. While we figure that out, we'll go a lot better. Because you're all the same color to them if you don't have six zeros in your bank account. and that's quite up. You know, that's.
Oh, there's a lot of truth in that. And see, the thing is, you know, you talk about the pill culture of South Florida, and my understanding of it is significantly different up here, because we hear the occasion, and it's shocking. Honest to God, it's shocking, because it used to be. The news report at the 11 o'clock news would be something like, state police announced today that they had confiscated a ton of marijuana, blah, 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 blah. Well, now you don't hear that anymore. What you hear now is state police announced today that they have confiscated $100,000 worth of prescription narcotics. And so you've got a broken culture here where a person, I started off talking about the roof collapse last night that killed two men. If you people get hurt all the time in the coal industry and in the timber industry, which are both big in this state. And when they're hurt, they get pain pills. And then when they're no longer hurt, they still need the pain pills, and they can't get them. And they also can't go back to work. And so,
I've got to ask a serious question here. I mean, the DEA determines how much pain you're allowed to be in. What the fuck? Seriously.
Oh,
When did we get to the point? Really?
If you have a chronic pain condition in this state, because the pill problem is so bad here, Scary J., you cannot get a prescription for pills, for pain pills. No matter how badly you need them, you can't get them.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so consequently, those pill mills you were talking about down your way, we've got people who load up, who will rent a van full of pill addicts, drive to Florida, fill the scripts. The way it works is the person who rents the van and buys the gas gets half of everybody's pills, and then they come home.
Or they could just buy heroin.
And every now and then you'll find that there's been a heroin bust up some holler in Kentucky or up some holler in West Virginia. And you know, as just a sort of fat, balding 50-something, I sit and go, heroin? West Virginia? Really? But, yeah, and the connection here... the connection here seems to be Detroit to Huntington for some reason or another. And I have a feeling it has to do with the fact that you can buy a gun in West Virginia more easily than you can buy booze. And so there necessarily develops this symbiotic relationship whereby smack will and other pills, what have you, will be brought south from Detroit. The mule will then load up on guns and sell the, you know, this is just mercantilism from the 17th century with interstate highways.
Take $5 off your challenge. I'm sending the $5 in the mail.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you have a Bitcoin address so I don't have to fool with the mail?
Because Bitcoin is just beyond me.
It's like PayPal, just with a 16-digit thing, and it's not reversible like PayPal, and you don't have to ask anybody's permission to get your money. It is the people's financial exchange.
I understand that much of it, but then it becomes the question of the learning curve of how to get the power company, the ISP, the phones to take Bitcoin.
No, you don't have to do any of that. You could send it to your cell phone. Yeah.
Wow.
Android Market. Yeah.
It's probably worth looking at somewhere, but is it stable yet?
It is past. It's so stable that the government's holding about $1 billion. In Bitcoin is from a raid they had last October. So, yeah, it's stable. In fact, they were the ones screwing around the press. And that's not conspiracy. That's just everyday fact. Yeah, it's very stable. The stuff I could tell kind of pissed. I'm up to date on all your podcasts, man. And Randy Rhodes leaving the air. I heard you first, a couple times I heard you, when you were standing in for Mike Malloy. And that spill you had. And I heard the chemical name.
Oh,
I was like, oh my God, you don't want to be anywhere near that.
Yeah, methylchlorohexane ethanol.
Yeah, and it, you can think of the last parts. Well, anything methanol causes blindness anyway. But the chlorohexane would add a chlorine to it, and the other parts make it even stronger. It's horrible stuff.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting you would bring that up because there are some new details out about the nature of the poisoning this state underwent. Survey results have been released. And they're really pretty frightening. Just based on the notion, just based on the idea that the leak happened on January 9th, which we kind of suspect is not true because of the amount of this stuff people in the neighborhood of Freedom Industries have been spilling since Christmas. Well, the survey results indicate that about 20% of the people in the poisoned area didn't find out about the leak until at least a day after. It turns out that if you take 300,000 people and work the percentages, somewhere at least 120,000 people ingested this stuff before they knew not to.
More than that, my suggestion would be eat lots of fruits and vegetables, man. That'd be about it. I went to the 7 Mile Bridge, which is the start of the Gulf of Mexico, about 10 years ago, and I think I was tripping balls too. It was at night, and I saw millions of fish swimming into the, they were going into the Gulf, and apparently the Gulf is some kind of worldwide mating ground. You follow me so far?
Oh yeah.
So, one of the worst days of my life up there with the Challenger explosion was when they made that spill because of what they actually dumped into the Gulf. We're kind of like kindred spirits here, you know, hydrocarbon industry, bodies of water. They dump DCM, which is dichloromethane. It's heavier than water. And it causes blindness. We're talking parts per billion, just like that stuff up there. And they dump hundreds of millions of gallons of this so they could suck the oil from the top, capture it, and then have it all drop to the bottom where you couldn't see it. And then they added flesh-eating bacteria. But actually, they were oil-eating bacteria, but I guess over the course of time, they mutated. I bring this up because there was a flesh-eating bacteria report coming out of New Orleans a couple weeks ago.
Jesus.
Wrap your mind around
it.
Well,
yeah, because, you know, they're just, it's just that they're willing to kill us for money. That's the bottom line.
What are you going to do, Bob? Well, What do we do?
Right off the bat, the first thing that I'll say is that you have to be informed. And it's obvious that much you are. After that, once you're informed, you can no longer be silent.
People don't want to know, though.
You know what? F them. There's no constitutional right to be ignorant. And you have to break that silence. And if it's
you realize that most of the additives in food today make people stupid on purpose.
Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
No, directly anything from MSG, which is monosodium glutamate, to Splenda or sucralose, that's a good one. That's why everybody has diabetes and heart problems all in the last 5 years.
Well, my personal bugaboo is high fructose corn syrup.
Oh yeah, that definitely makes me crazy. Or people, I'm a vegetarian now. I mean, I used to love a good burger, but I asked somebody once, "Hey, do you know that the hormones you're using?" Cows are also active in humans. And I'm like, yeah, really, yeah. I go, Which hormones do you want? You want the growth hormones or the bloom hormones?
Right.
Well, on ground beef, you don't really get to choose, do you?
No, and if you're a label reading nerd like I am, you find that label that says this ground beef may come from Argentina, Australia, Chile, China, Mexico. And really, I mean, wow. Just like the thing that happened last week with the, hey, my apple juice is from China. And so I go to the Twitter and I start tweeting at Ocean Spray Inc. about it. And they write, well, Bob, you need to understand it's produced in the United States from some materials from overseas. So, yeah, they admit it. It's Chinese apples.
When you put that together with there's this lady in Florida, she had a garden. Organic garden. They said, no gardening. You can't grow your own food. You need our poison. Or in North Dakota, I think there's like a solar array up there that just went, where they're actually selling energy back to the grid. And they want to put it, I think it's either North Dakota or Oklahoma, they want to put a tax back on them because they're not using the grid.
Yeah, that's the next big thing. They're calling people who produce their own energy free riders, F-R-E-E-R-I-D-E-R-S, free riders, and they're saying that they need to be taxed because they're not contributing to the upkeep of the grid. And this was all developed, and I mean, this isn't Art Bell stuff. This is verified. This was all developed at the last big Koch brothers meeting. They decided that they're going to go after wind and solar now.
I'm ready to shoot those fuckers in the face. I swear to God. Seriously. I can't even say that because I'll come get you. But you know what I'm saying. The Supreme. We'll just put it that way.
A buddy of mine used to say, I've got a short list of people who had better pray every night I don't get a terminal disease.
Wow. I don't get it. I live close to Rush Limbaugh, within 40 miles, but...
Oh, yeah, oh, the 12,000-square-foot mansion with the cat, the maid, and the wife in the pit?
And I don't know, you know...
I mean, I've heard that she's on milk cartons down there.
You know, the other thing is, I'm a Christian, and most Christians terrify me. I left organized Christianity when everybody started beating the war drum, right? Because somehow, you know, bombing Iraq and it was you know what God wanted you to do. The God I worship says that's not true ever, no matter what. Doesn't matter. And I don't know.
Well, you know, it says right there in I think Matthew, take up thy M16 and follow me. No, it doesn't, does it?
Yeah, that's a Matthias 441.
Oh, okay.
That's 404.
Oh, okay. Oh, Matthias 30-06.
Yes, yes. I love you, Bob. I love the whole Horn Radio Network. My girl's looking at me. Dinner is served. I bet she's hit me now that I mentioned her.
Oh,
she's running away.
Well, hi. Don't run away. We're not scary. Bon appetit, by all means, and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Uh-huh. Scary J, first-time caller, six-month listener, calling from South Florida. See, first-time listener, we have never, except when I punched the wrong damn button, we have never lost a first-time caller. I mean, nobody faints, nobody gets, like, all dry-mouthed and scary. It can be done. Jump in. If you've never tried it, you're going to enjoy it. Jump in if you'd like. 304-658-3333 is the number. And thanks to Scary J for helping out. That takes us down below the $200 mark for fundraising for this evening. And it would be really nice not to have a $350 goal for tomorrow followed by a $500 goal for Thursday because, well, it just, yeah. Thanks for the. I don't have an email for Scary J, but by all means, thanks, Tim. The medical marijuana in Los Angeles map. Thanks. Let's keep it rolling. Go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you say that now, Bob. That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, we'll see how long it lasts, Bill.
Okay. Number one, compliments for last night about Rand Paul's hair.
Oh, the thing on his head?
All I could think of was a song from about 1954 sung by a guy named Bill Hayes. Baby, Rand Paul, the king of the wild fun. What the hell is with these people, anyway?
Randy Paul, king of the wild hairpiece.
King of the rotten hairpiece, yeah. You got it. Yeah, you had me going on that one.
Hey, there it is, king of the unreal hair.
Unreal hair. Oh, God, I had a couple of friends of mine that were bikers. One of them actually ended up in the organization for a while, and they were actually, we're talking 1981, they were wearing real raccoon hair caps, which had me shaking my head, of course, I said,
really?
Yeah, these guys did. And one
did it have the little black mask part that flipped down over their eyes?
No, I never remember seeing them do that. But on the other hand, the one guy, he made the big time for a while, and then he's not part of it. I used to do a lot of, I did a lot of music jobs for those guys. And it was a wrestle to do it. You're always afraid of, well, let's hope they pay you, that kind of deal. Because what are you going to do if they don't? Not much. I got some questions for you. My memory is killing me. What did they call the bunch, three or four different occasions, groups launched attacks on Cuba before the Civil War? What the hell did they call? There was a name for those guys.
Oh, God, I don't even know if I ever knew that, Bill.
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah, they went over there, and a lot of them were treated to the Spanish necktie, which is made out of wire,
Yes.
Wrapped around the neck and pulled in opposite directions, yeah. They had a name for those guys because they were all they could see, Bob, in all honesty, what they could see. How many more cotton crops do you think they'd be able to pull out of the ground in Cuba per year? You think they get three?
Not for very long because they burn the soil up.
Of course. You and I know that. I just finished...
I mentioned a little bit ago that I looked at that sea level rise map. South Florida goes away.
Yep.
Oddly enough, most of Cuba and most of Hispaniola, in other words, Haiti and the Dominican Republic, are still there because it's fairly mountainous country. Puerto Rico is still there.
Who was trying to run Havana before Castro?
Oh, Batista?
People wild ass guess.
Oh, the mob?
Yep. That was going to be the new gambling capital. And they'd like to do it again when they can get rid of Castro. What a resort area that will be, you see. Not too good for the people. I read a good book on Satchel Paige, and when the guy from the Dominican Republic who lasted forever, what the hell was his name? Trio. He hired Satchel under threat to come down and pitch for his baseball team because before you gave a political speech, you have a game ready to go. And Satchel was doing the pitching for Trujillo because he had basically been told if you don't like it. Because there's a good book on Page that I read a couple years ago. Now I'm trying to find a book that I had... The Landscape Turned Red, which was, if I'm not mistaken, that's a line from, what is it, how do you pronounce it, Goethe? G-O-E-T-H-E?
Goethe.
He used that line to describe something, and one of the guys at Antietam, that was his description of what it looked like about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And me, I love that area so much. Well, that's where the, what is it, Camp David's up in that area, is it not?
Maryland?
Yep. In the Catoctin Mountains?
Yep.
Yeah. And, well, the Valley of Virginia was pretty decent when I was there. Pretty nice, you know, but, oh, well. Yeah, you keep looking around at today, and Bobby, you think of the long yesterdays, and things don't seem to want to change a goddamn thing. And they're willing, as you're talking tonight about this situation, well, even we had an earthquake here about 20 years ago. I was in a restaurant about four blocks from here, and I could feel something shaking. The damn earthquake took place way out in Lake County, off Menor Headlands Beach, is where the quake was. And, you know, this is Lake Erie, and I never heard of such a thing in my life until then. And we've had a few others since then, too. And the weather. Am I crazy, or are we having some violent rainstorms?
I was 12 minutes late getting to the mic this evening, Bill.
Yep.
After 10 years of this, I can just kind of predict how things are going to work. And in this instance, it was pretty much a lead pipe cinch that the internet was going to go down, the lights would blink. So I kind of waited until after all the lightning and thunder had passed, and then I got started, and lo and behold, it crapped out anyway.
Yeah. It's a problem. It's just a pain that, you know, it was not always that way. And when did you left early because of your dad's job, right?
Oh, no, my folks left here in 1960, and I was born down there in 1963.
Yeah. So when did you get back up to your God's country?
Well, we came up at least twice a year, every year of my life.
Yeah, that was
like I used to say when all my buddies were saying, "Hey, we're going to the beach. We're going to have a great time. Where are you going?" Back to West Virginia.
Yeah, well,
and they would laugh and they, "Oh, you're going back to the sticks."
Yeah, well.
But you know what? Family was here. And
well, that's another thing. You raised that point about the demise of the American family post-World War II. People were scattered from here to
hell. Secular, liberal, non-Christians didn't do that. Capitalism did that.
Because,
you know, we couldn't, just by way of example, we couldn't leave the Bagent family living on the farm they'd been living on for 200 years up there in the panhandle of West Virginia. Subsistence farming and surviving, thank you very much. No, they, by God, had to be busted up and sent hither, thither, and yon to go work in Akron or work in Detroit or work in Cleveland and sit there and pine for home. Because and you know what? I'll bet you a whole bunch of people don't even believe me when I talk about what Appalachia means to displaced Appalachians. And because it's my experience, you know, I don't know if somebody who grew up in Iowa pines for Ottumwa from, you know, Denver. But I can tell you for a fact that there are people in Atlanta, there are people in Charlotte, there are people in Boston, there are people in New York, there are people in Cleveland and Chicago. And to a person, sooner they'll sit down, you know, on a Sunday afternoon when they're and they'll think about it, and maybe someday we can move back to West Virginia. This place, you'd think that there was some sort of magnetic deposit underneath that just pulled the iron in the blood right back here.
And there's something about real home, and I never had that situation. I have moved all over the city of Cleveland. Well, I'm living about six blocks or less from a house that my first wife and I had up there we bought. And there's a restaurant down here, a vegetarian restaurant that I used to eat at so often. They named a good sandwich after me, buddy. Bacon, tomato, She was in peanut butter. They should have called her the Elvis Jr. Except they had bananas on it. And I hung there daily because the boss man there hired some of the prettiest women in the world. I'm still close to one of them, and she's 60 now, you know. So,
still beautiful, too, I bet you.
Oh, still a good-looking kid. And a buddy of mine had a TV shop right across the street. And that's where I met the young drummer who had a recording studio in Bedford, Ohio, and that's where we did the Killer Stress album with the CD was recorded in his studio. It was a studio thing I did. The other two were live because I was always a guy who believed that there's something about playing live that's, you know, you can't put a price on it. Well, I did, but never was enough anyway. It was fun.
You can't put a price on it until the promoter refuses to put a price on it.
Oh, well, I was lucky. James Cotton was playing at a folk club here, and that poor man couldn't turn around without falling over me in 1967. I was there with a mouthful of questions, you know. And Robert Junior Lockwood, I knew Robert when he was playing Black Bars, and hardly anybody ever knew who he was. I did, because he also was a delivery man for an industrial drugstore. He used to bring my mother my mother had diabetes, so what the hell did they shoot up or ingest? What's the name of that type of drug that diabetics use?
Oh, insulin?
Insulin, yeah. He used to deliver insulin to the house, and I'd just chat with him for a while, and I was playing. Some bars were the only Caucasians in the room were me and one other guy in the band out of the four of us playing, you know. It was that and living in a housing project early in life, you just got over so much shit so much earlier. I get a younger black health aide, some of the women, and they're just astounded. When I start playing recordings, they look at you like, where the hell did you learn about that stuff? I said, you know, and the thing is with them is I said, well, you got to go ask your grandmother about this stuff. Because, and hell, I saw Muddy Waters play outdoors at a big, and hell, Cleveland, we had a couple of big burnings up here. I was in Detroit in 67, which I believe was the big burn year up there, the 67 year. And I was hanging out with the guys from a group called the MC5. They were living in a burned out apartment up there. Sit in the act with them, you know. It was just a strange time to be around, and I'm going to miss it, I suppose. Only I won't know that it's gone when I miss it, because I don't think there's any pearly gates. But I wish somebody in the family would email the name of what they call those goddamn... It was something similar to freebooters.
Because Randy and PA responded. You didn't mean the Rough Riders.
No, Rough Riders were 1898. That was the Spanish American War, which was a setup too, by the way, Bob. I think for years a lot of people, the military, we look at the main incident and we think it was a. I'll tell you what, I haven't learned so much reading the post World War II stuff. Jesus. Well, who was it? The brothers, you know, the right-wing bastards, the two brothers, that are raising hell all over the country, that Koch family?
Yeah.
Their father did business with Stalin, trying to teach Stalin the oil business, and Stalin stiffed him on the money.
Right.
Do you think that has anything to do with
it? Yeah, that's when he became a rabid anti-communist.
Yeah. Another thing was I don't know if you've ever read anything about the bonus mergers.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah. These things are all... I think they bury American history in school today. I really think they do. That they don't want to teach it at all, because if you look back and... What was this court you were talking about? Who was the Supreme Court judge? Who was running it?
Roberts.
Oh, no, this was the one years ago.
Oh, Plessy versus Ferguson?
Yeah, Plessy versus Ferguson, yes. Was that Lochner?
You know, you're in the same neighborhood. It's an 1896 decision by those pro-business right-wing reactionaries.
Yeah. The Gilded Age.
It was a challenge. It was a challenge to a law out of Louisiana. The slaughterhouse cases came out of Louisiana too, about the same time.
Yep.
But the thing is, Plessy was a 7-1 decision.
Holy Jesus! I can always remember this.
And it took Brown. It took Brown versus Board of Education in 1954 to strike it down. The lone justice dissenting was John Marshall Harlan.
Okay. Well, what happened to
And it wasn't, you know, the thing is, it wasn't a school case, it was a railroad case, Bill.
Yeah. Well, if you go around the country, you can still see in many cases that the railroads ran the country during their heyday.
Yeah.
Lakewood, Ohio has a strip of track that runs right through the residential neighborhood. It's only a single track. In fact, our friend Dennis had to fight like hell because the railroads really wanted to...
Well, this particular decision is just nasty, and that's why I compare the ACA decision to it, because condemning people in Alabama and Mississippi and Florida and South Carolina to death is just nasty. Here's one of the infamous takeaway quotes from Plessy, Bill. Majority was written by Henry Billings Brown, and he said, "We consider the underlying fallacy of the plaintiff's argument because it was a setup case. The arrangements had been made for Mr. Plessy to be arrested in an act of civil disobedience, trying to ride in the wrong part of the railroad train."
Okay.
And so this, you know, this racist prick on the Supreme Court writes, "We consider the underlying fallacy of the plaintiff's argument to consist in the assumption that the enforced separation of the two races stamps the colored race with a badge of inferiority. If this be so, it is not by reason of anything found in the act, but solely because the colored race chooses to put that construction upon it." And what? 114 years later, by God, you've got right-wingers walking around talking about how urban men won't work.
Well, I know when I was a kid, it was really tough. I was talking to my health aide about that. I said, you know, in the 50s, it was tough on a black man to get a job. The women, the sociologists who have written books, that the women got to work. They got the better treatment because they weren't feared by the other people, you see.
Yeah.
But you make a male, and I don't care if the guy was a male from Mars, if he didn't look exactly like you, then you're somebody to be afraid of. We had a gang in Rumble Hill, which, of course, to me, what the hell is that stuff? You know, what can I tell you? I don't, you know, I'm not, I have a good grasp of it, Bob. Things like melodies and such are important to me. And you were talking about maple sugar, this mechanically made syrup. That stuff is poison. But it's hard to, I just connected with a friend of mine who goes out to Sheridan and buys the real stuff. And Bob, you can buy that stuff for a buck and a half a gallon in the 50s. Try to find it now. Because I don't think West by God has a big, does you guys have a history of maple sugar production?
Oh yeah, the sugar maple is the state tree.
Oh, then I didn't know that. I figured it was, up here. I've learned so much crazy stuff. You know, there is a type of peach that is found along the shores of Lake Erie and into Canada. And damn it, I can't think of the type of peach. I have to, I depend on the family guys who can Google, but it's a type of peach. Because I knew a guy up here who grew peaches. He was an old man in the 90s, and he'd grown them all his life. And the only other place I've ever seen him is up along Ontario, and because something happened up here when that water receded and such, certain things were left behind. You know, there's certain things that I don't understand.
Well, I understand that, you know, you're part of the last great glaciation up there. And the glaciers ultimately came down as far as central Missouri, but they never were able to overtop the Appalachians. So when all of that countryside had been scrubbed absolutely clean, when the glaciers retreated, most of North America was receded by Appalachia. So the fact that there are sugar maples in Vermont or Canada may have to do with the fact that there were sugar maples here.
Yeah.
But when we talk about something like a peach, understand, peaches are part of the Columbian Exchange. There were no peaches before white folks got here. Within 100 years of the arrival of white people, a wholesale change in the flora of North America was already well underway. The great forests of North America were being transformed almost before people's eyes. Whereas the hardwood forests had been primarily oak and maybe an oak and primarily American chestnut, monumental trees. We see these. West Virginia, for instance, was completely deforested by about 1920. And so our idea of a forest is to see a bunch of trees with a bunch of scrubby shit growing underneath it. Well, that was not the forest primeval, so to speak, of North America before the white folks. It was a forest with massive trees, hardwood forests with not a lot of underbrush, and a canopy 200 feet in the air. And the indigenous peoples managed it. But the white folks weren't bright enough to recognize that they were looking at something that had been managed.
Yeah.
I mean, those American chestnuts were producing chestnuts, which can be dried and ground into meal. There are very famous references to something that the Muscogee people and Cherokee people made called hickory milk. Made from hickory nuts, and it is said to be absolutely delicious. Long before Brad and Melissa Shithead ever decided that, oh, Muffy, we're going to drink the soy milk now.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, the amount of chemicals in the milk. I remember reading a thing, God knows, it had to be 20-some years ago, about what the chemicals in the milk were doing to female bodies. They were studying that. Of course, what if it's doing something to females? It ain't helping us either, you know, in many ways. Because I actually worked for a dairy that we had a type of milk called Golden Guernsey. And Bob, on the top of the bottle, when you delivered it, butter fat was floating on the top of it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I was 21. That's 50 years ago. And 50 years is a spit in time, Bob. In reality, it's a spit in time. It means nothing.
You know
about things that I have never heard of. In the prehistory of, quote, civilization in this country. I mean, we were talking about something that happened out in, was it Colorado or Wyoming, where these idiots went nuts with the four-wheelers?
That was Utah.
Utah, yeah.
And it forced a much more responsibly planned outing for American veterans to be canceled. So, thanks, patriots in Utah.
Yeah. I know some people, I mean, motorcycles are my second wife liked them. She went out and bought herself a big one and went halfway down the driveway and fell off, and she never rode it again. But I had a hell of a lot of friends in the 60s who were like me. I was...
But this isn't... I'm sure they'd love to make it possible for dirt bike riders to get down into Recapture Canyon, too. But this was some sort of a four-wheeler trek.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know what it is that makes four-wheelers more
freedom-ish,
but it does.
Some people like noise a lot, Bob. I mean, guys with outboard engines, that's one thing I hated about a 25 or a 35 horse outboard. I didn't like it, but it would get you. And hell, I could have had a 60 or bigger on that boat I had, but I just, the hell with it. I'll tell you what I prefer. Give me those electric motors so I can sneak up on these damn fish.
Yeah, but by the same token, you know, I've seen those little stickers on Harleys that say, loud pipes save lives. And I think there's probably some truth in that, Bill, because most motorcycle accidents are not caused by motorcyclists.
Nope, it's people who don't know what a goddamn side view mirror is for. And I mean, after you've driven pickups and vans, those side views and fit with fish eyes and that's like, that's how you get in and out. Well, Bob, I was driving a 3/4 ton with a walk-in camper. I carried my own damn private dressing room. So I could go to a job very early. Make sure all that PA stuff was working, fix what wasn't working, have a toolbox full of voltmeters and soldering irons and everything you needed to repair something. And then go out and go to sleep for 3 hours and then walk in the bar like nicely refreshed and ready to literally blow your face off, which was the account of what I... My reputation up here is I'm finding after the... Because the stroke that I had, Bob, thanks to one of our callers, who has a name, he has the same name as a great rock and roll pianist and record scout for some, and he was married to a wild singing, dancing woman that was really popular. I think I've told you who, But my friend in Central Ohio there, he saved my ass, Bob. He was able to backtrack by phone and send the police up, and I was just launching. Well, I'd sure like to hear some of that stuff sometime, but to hear how bad I sounded that night.
Maybe somebody will find it and clip it out for you.
Well, I had worked myself into a... Well, I was packing to move, and I was anxious to get the hell out of that building because I just didn't like them. They didn't like me.
Well,
they didn't understand.
All kidding aside, stress is toxic.
What?
I said, all kidding aside, stress is toxic.
Yeah, well, I was off the mark that night really badly. I tend to drift a lot because I still can't think of what they call those idiots who would try to put on a... It is
very seldom that someone doesn't come up with an answer out of the Horn family commune. But you've apparently stymied a lot of people.
Well, it was pretty Civil War activities, it's like Fletcher Pratt. There's a name for it, but he's a great writer. His short history of the Civil War is almost flowery in the descriptions of. He made the first reference that I ever saw to Krakatoa in his book. Makes a reference to it. And I said, what the hell is Krakatoa? I had to go look that up. I didn't know what it was. What was that, one of the biggest earthquakes?
A huge volcanic eruption in the South Pacific.
A volcanic eruption, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's been several of those in our lifetime. I remember Etna went years ago. Back in the late 40s, early 50s, they had problems around Naples.
Oh, golly Moses, you remind me of something. I watched the other night a fairly recent release called Pompeii.
Oh, yeah.
And Ferg had watched it, and he said, you know, hey, Dad, watch this with me. I want you to see it. And I was I was howling like a monkey on acid within like 3 minutes of the credits getting done, because I guess it's impossible to make a movie about ancient Rome without engaging in just drop dead wrong stereotypes.
Yeah. I had a good book once. It was a study of the gladiatorial combats and the games, crowds and rumors or something. Because my God, but that was a long time ago. So the farther back you go, you can expect stupidity. What bothers you, is when you get something sent to you and you find it and you use it on a daily basis and it was said yesterday or 10 hours ago. And if something is permanently stupid or something that was said so long ago, you can't count that far back. I mean, it's words based on ignorance that really gets you after. And we see it constantly here. This is our enemy. Ignorance is the enemy of, ignorance is the enemy of everything. I won't keep you, but anyway, I appreciate it. But I thought you'd enjoy the remark about Mr. Paul's hair.
Oh, very much so.
Ayn Rand was a subject of conversation in the 1960s. Maybe I was running with the wrong crowd, but most of us thought she was a flaming idiot.
There aren't very many people who are actually studied in the arranging of words into cogent sentences who think that she's anything but a hack.
Yeah. Well, I think she left Russia because of anger. Did the Bolsheviks come after her or steal her family's business?
I don't know. I've got a good buddy who says, say what you will about the Bolsheviks, they managed to figure out a way not to be saddled with Ayn Rand.
That's a good point. Well, that's a goal, because if somebody else ought to get on here and teach me a little bit. Everybody you get has something to say.
That's the beauty of the whole community, Bill. It really, really is.
Well, good night, my friend. Take it easy.
All right, you too. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Yeah, don't. The movie Pompeii, don't. Just don't. I mean, they've got... And it's frustrating, because I'm sitting there watching with my son, and I'm trying to not just scream, and at the same time he's going, what, Dad, what? You know, it's really not much fun watching some movies with you. And so I'm, because there's this gladiatorial scene, and I mean, people are getting gigged and gutted and split, and it wasn't like that. Gladiators were professional athletes. Yeah, they got hurt. Sometimes they died in the arena. But it wasn't, everything was not a fight to the death, because it cost money to train a gladiator. And there were gladiator schools. And gladiators were sex symbols. At the end of a match, they'd be cleaned up and they'd be rubbed down with olive oil, and then the sweat and there was a specific tool developed where the sweat and the olive oil would be gathered off the curvature of their arms and their backs and would be bottled and sold to upper-class women as an aphrodisiac. No shit. And so you can't do that if everybody's gutting each other. Even down to the notion of, the thumbs up or the thumbs down for the live or die, there's nothing in the literature that tells us that that's what it was about. The most that we think we know is that they extended, whoever was in charge, extended a thumb to one side. It was held out parallel to the ground. And then the signal would be given, and the way it's interpreted is that they either gave thumbs up or thumbs down, because that's culturally what we would do. But it ain't necessarily so. The person may have just closed their thumb onto their fist, meaning, party's over. But Jesus. I haven't done a movie review in a while. the part of it that just drove me batty. Now, this is 79 of the Common Era. Pompeii is the playground of the Roman 1%. It was Vegas and the Hamptons and South Beach all rolled into one under a volcano. The slopes of Vesuvius were covered in grapevines. There were sports arenas. There were theatrical amphitheaters. Fast food stalls. The streets were set up with paving stones so that people could walk across dry when every day they would release the water supply to rinse out all the dirt and poop and, you know, horse droppings and whatever through the streets to keep it clean and eventually wash it down into the Bay of Naples. It was Roman, 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 Roman. But the entire plot of this incredibly stupid movie revolves around some notion that Pompeii wanted to be free of Rome, when there is not even a microscopic ionic whit of evidence to suggest that. Okay, well, we finally have an answer to Bill's question, Dr. John digging around. The word applied to the guys who went to Cuba illegally to foment insurrection were filibusters or freebooters. Among other things, Dr. John directs me to a Wikipedia page noting that William Walker was a filibuster who launched several expeditions into Latin America. For a little while, he ruled Nicaragua. But eventually he had to come home to the United States. In 1860, he was captured and executed in Honduras. A filibuster or a freebooter is someone who engages in an unauthorized military expedition into a foreign country to foment or support a revolution. The term is usually to describe United States citizens who attempted to foment insurrections in Latin America in the mid-19th century, but is also applicable to the modern day. Filibusters are irregular soldiers who act without authority from their own government. They're sort of, I don't know, could we call them land pirates? And the word for holding up debate in the Senate of the United States actually comes from this conduct. I guess you could say that one of the first freebooters or filibusters was allegedly Aaron Burr. And lo and behold, everything that he was accused of doing, the United States largely wound up adopting or doing more of as the 19th century progressed. Thanks very much to our buddy Chris. He's helped out with fundraising, telling me that Boss Man Wayne needs to keep an eye on the mailbox. Thank you, Chris. So I'm guessing we are down around $180 to go for fundraising this evening. The PayPal button, you know where that is, headonradionetwork.com. The snail mail address is there, too, of course. I said snail mail. Traditional postal service mail address. It's best not to get any deeper into a hole than we already are. A couple of stories before we get out of here. I don't know how much I don't know how much coverage this has gotten in the wider media today, but gosh, let's at least make sure we talk about it. Berkeley Springs, West Virginia, was kind of a resort town or a place to go and take the waters for the well-heeled, well-to-do of the 18th and 19th centuries because they were said to have healing properties. The same thing would happen later on in what is now Greenbrier County, where the Greenbrier Resort is. It was built around a series of hot springs. There were hot springs not too far over into Virginia as well, where the homestead is. Well, it turns out that U.S. Silica has had a little problem over near Berkeley Springs. U.S. Silica, certainly a well-intentioned corporation, if ever there was one. They produce sand. They have a sand mine near Berkeley Springs. And as part and parcel of the work they do with their sand mine, you reckon this might be frack sand? I don't know. Just guessing, speculating, pure and simple. But it was about 2:45 p.m. when somebody at U.S. Silica picked up the phone and called the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and said, we got a little problem here. Yeah, what is it? See, we've got this sulfuric acid pipeline. Y'all been inspecting it regular yourself, haven't you? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But our sulfuric acid pipeline, well, we've had a boo-boo. Yeah, how much sulfuric acid do you have? We only store about 53,000 pounds of the stuff. Well, what happened? We spilled some of it. How much did you spill? Don't know. Well, some portion of 53,000 pounds. And as of the publication of this Charleston Gazette story, the language used in the report says, crews were trying to contain a sulfuric acid spill in the eastern panhandle, and emergency officials were trying to determine whether to evacuate nearby residents. That trying to will bust your ass every time. Trying to contain. Listen, if they're not succeeding in containing it and they're still trying to, then don't try to determine whether to evacuate. Why not evacuate? But then again, that would be inconsistent with the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection actually being proactive on one of these problems. They're trying to contain it, and that's the latest there is. They're just trying. I would not want to be one of those folks trying to contain a sulfuric acid spill. Ew. Yeah. That's pretty vile. By the way, something I mentioned when I was talking to Scary J, officials in the state of West Virginia have released the results of a survey following the coal washing chemical disaster of January to February to probably still going on now. Ken Ward Jr. has the report over at the Charleston Gazette, and I reiterate my question, what the do we have to do to get this guy a Pulitzer? He reports that people in the 9-county area where the water was poisoned, well, they've started using the water again, according to the survey. But by using, we don't necessarily mean consuming. The survey took place in early April, and according to the Kanawha County Health Department's Director Rahul Gupta, Dr. Gupta said that well over 90% of the residents in the Kanawha Valley say they are using West Virginia Americans' for-profit water. However, of the 90% who said they are, only 36% said that they were willing to play with their health and their future by actually drinking the stuff. Of the 90% who said they are using it, they said, well, yeah, I mean, we're bathing with it. We're showering with it. That was almost all the 90%. The number gets cut in half for those who say that they're willing to cook with it. And slightly less, about 44% say that they're willing to water a plant with it. By the way, by virtue of this survey, which was of about 500 people and was conducted by telephone, they indicated that as far as feeling confident about the public water supply, that's dropped to about 30% confidence. Before the leak, 80% of people said they thought the water was okay. It's below 30% now. Those who said before that it was unsafe were less than 10%. After the disaster, those who say the water is still unsafe is above 50%. Here's where it gets frightening. About 25% of residents in the poisoned water area went ahead and used the water after the do not use order. Of that number, 3/4 bathed in the water, 37% said they drank it, and 20% said they gave it, 28% said they gave it to their pets. Then this, 70% of those who reported some sort of illness or symptoms, which was a tall number by itself, because it was about a third, of those people didn't seek medical attention. Because, among other things, we had a governor who was saying, y'all don't need to go to the hospital. It's flu season. I mean, all these symptoms showing up at the hospital, it ain't necessarily because of the water. It's a flu season, damn it. Of the people seeking medical help, only 28% of them went to a hospital emergency room. How interesting would it be to determine what sub-portion of that number were people who didn't go to the hospital because they did not have health care? So what we know is we have a lot of people who drank the water, bathed in the water, cooked with the water, used the water. We got a lot of people who ingested this shit. And we got a lot of people that we're going to have to worry about and wonder about down the road. But the nice thing, at least as far as corporate America is concerned, is when you find out you got cancer 20 years down the road, well, hell, you've been breathing exhaust fumes and you're probably smoking like a chimney and didn't go to church or nothing. And who knows? I mean, you know, sometimes cancer just happens. Right? Oh, an update on that Turkish coal mine collapse because coal kills. the death toll has been raised in that disaster to 151. And hundreds more are still trapped underground. I find this to be a mind-boggling number. Energy Minister Taner Yildiz said 787 people were inside the coal mine in Soma, Turkey, at the time of the accident. 363 had been rescued so far. 76 miners were injured, one in serious condition. The disaster followed an explosion and fire caused by a power distribution unit. Most of the deaths, on the other hand, were caused by carbon monoxide poisoning. Because coal kills. It just does. Like I said on the front end, it's been a busy, Titanic Tuesday. You know, a couple of weeks back, I posed a picture of Doodle in her prom dress, and it probably got more likes on my Facebook page than any other thing I've ever posted. And we were proud of that. And if you see, it was a long gown she was wearing all the way down to the floor. But that's not necessarily the entirety of prom dress style. Enter a young woman of 17 years by the name of Claire, who lives over in the Old Dominion of Virginia. She was signed up and had her tickets to go to the homeschool prom. I guess this means that it was a prom that was set up for people who were homeschooled and taught those important things, that they don't necessarily teach in the government schools.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But anyway, she was all excited, Claire was, to go to her homeschool prom. And she did what young women do. She went and probably agonized and tried on 9 dozen dresses. Because it's exciting. And you want it, it's your prom, and you want everything to be just perfect, right? And of course, the homeschool prom had a rule about the filthy females and how short their dresses could be. Because, you know, all sexuality is driven by females and their nasty libidos that make boys behave like barbarians. So Claire picked out a pretty short, sparkly number. No particularly showy décolletage. And it fit within the fingertip rule. The dress had to be longer than her fingertips at her side, you know, because Eve screwed the pooch for everybody. The prom wasn't even properly underway there in Richmond. She and her friends, excited to be at the prom, were standing on the dance floor, just kind of swaying because nobody was dancing yet, just kind of swaying to the music. Claire, by the way, is 5'9" tall. Sure, she's a lovely young woman. She's apparently smart and literate. Because she didn't take too well to it when one of the men who was the chaperone of the Richmond homeschool prom came up to her and said she was a dancing too provocative. because the way she was dancing was going to, and this is a quote, cause the young men at the prom to think impure thoughts. She said, I'm not doing anything over here. I'm not even dancing. They said, well, your dress is too short. You don't have to leave. She wrote a blog post about it, and if you'd like to go and read it, bless her heart. It's at a blog called Wine and Marble. HannahHettinger.com, HannahHettinger.com. The name of the blog post, and I'm guessing the homeschooling didn't work out so well, because the name of the blog post is Fuck the Patriarchy. Well, she says, so I'm a high school senior, a homeschooler, and a girl, and something really awful happened to me last night, and it made me really mad. Not so much because it was something that did permanent damage to me, but because it is something I've seen happen over and over and over to people I love and care for very much. And on what better day than Mother's Day could I make a stand for the mothers and the sisters and the daughters and the friends who've been victims of this painful, traumatizing evil? So here's my story. She begins, last night was my senior prom. I live in Richmond, Virginia, and several weeks ago my boyfriend got our tickets to the Richmond homeschool prom. The theme was Twilight in Paris. I got my dress, my shoes, we got our flowers, and we waited eagerly for Saturday to arrive. My dress was gorgeous, silver, and sparkly, and I got it at Macy's and was very excited to find it after searching over six stores. I told you for this dress. The only dress code specified on the registration form was that ladies, please keep your dresses fingertip length or longer. Like a good little homeschooler, I made sure that the dress was fingertip length on me. I even tried it on with my shoes just to be sure. It was fingertip length. I was ecstatic, and I laid down several weeks' worth of tip money I'd been saving up to buy it. Fast forward to prom night. I'm all dolled up, channeling my inner Marilyn Monroe with my blonde hair and bright red lipstick. I'm tall and fairly curvy girl, and you know something? I looked hot. Not trashy, but you definitely would look twice when I walked through a doorway. Bless her. And you know what happened? She says, I got kicked out of prom because of it. Stay with me. I'll explain. She showed up at prom with her boyfriend, and here's the real problem. Her boyfriend at prom is a man of color. They got her out of there on the pretense of her suggestive dancing and her dress, but in the at the end of the day, the young man went with her. There he is in his white shirt and his vest and his bright red silk tie and his boutonniere. Got a nice, rocking a nice fedora hat. He had to go. Sons of bitches made her cry. And, of course, it's all because... Christian daddies can't resist looking at the young things in the prom gowns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the impure thoughts weren't in the young men's minds. It was in theirs. And then there were the really icky thoughts because of who she was there with. I guess it didn't dawn on her that there might be pretextual stuff going on. Thank you, Thomas, for helping out. $170 is where we find ourselves. That's the size of our hole as we close the program this evening. Thanks, thanks very much, Sal and Chris and Scary Jay and Thomas. Hopefully we'll make up some of the shortfall or maybe all of it tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, our moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch. Like I said, big doings coming from John Fox real soon. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.